ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So today we are reading from
Suvasi, canto 30.
Yeah, that's about right. Today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, chapter 19, the killing of the demon Hiranyaksha, text 30. Deva Uchu. Namo Namaste Kila Yajna Tantave. Namo Namaste Kila Yajna Tantave. Sita Grihita Mala Satkamutaye. Sita Grihita Mala Satkamutaye. Dishyahato Yam Jagatam Maruntudas. Dishyahato Yam Jagatam Maruntudas. Tatpada Bhaktya Vayamisha Nivrita. Tatpada Bhaktya Vayamisha Nivrita. Deva Uchu. The demigods say. Nama. Obeisances. Nama. Obeisances. Te. Unto you. Akila Yajna Tantave. The enjoyer of all sacrifices. Sital. For the purpose of maintaining. Grihita. Assumed. Amala. Pure. Sattva. Goodness. Mutaye. Form. Distya. Fortunately. Hata. Slain. Ayam. This. Jagatam. To the worst. Arundhata. Causing torment. Tvatpada. To your feet. Bhaktya. With devotion. Vayam. We. Isha. O Lord. Nivrita. Have attained happiness. Translation. The demigods address the Lord. All obeisances unto you. You are the enjoyer of all sacrifices, and you have assumed the form of a boar in pure goodness for the purpose of maintaining the world. Fortunately for us, this demon who was a torment to the world has been slain by you, and we too. O Lord, are now at ease in devotion to your lotus feet. Purport by Sri Ramakrishna Prabhupada. The material world consists of three modes, goodness, passion, and ignorance. But the spiritual world is pure goodness. It is said here that the form of the Lord is pure goodness, which means that it is not material. In the material world, there is no pure goodness. In the Bhagavatam, the stage of pure goodness is called Sattvam Vishuddham. Vishuddham means pure. In pure goodness, there is no contamination by the two inferior qualities, namely passion and ignorance. The form of the boar, therefore, in which the Lord appeared, is nothing of the material world. There are many other forms of the Lord, but none of them belong to the material qualities. Such forms are non-different from the Vishnu form, and Vishnu is the enjoyer of all sacrifices. The sacrifices which are recommended in the Vedas are meant to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In ignorance only, people try to satisfy many other agents. But the real purpose of life is to satisfy the Supreme Lord, Vishnu. All sacrifices are meant to please the Supreme Lord. The Lord, the living entities who know this perfectly well, are called demigods, godly or almost God. Since the living entity is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, it is his duty to serve the Lord and please him. The demigods are all attached to the personality of Godhead, and for their pleasure, the demon who was a source of trouble to the world was killed. Purified life is meant to please the Lord, and all sacrifices performed in purified life are called Krishna consciousness. This Krishna consciousness is developed by devotional service, as clearly mentioned here. Deva Uchu, Namo Namaste Kilayakya Tantave, Sita Guhita Marasat Pumutaye, Disyahato Yam Jagatam Aruntudas, Tadpada Bhaktya Vayam Isha Nivrita. Translation again. The demigods address the Lord, all obeisances unto you. You are the enjoyer of all sacrifices, and you have assumed the form of a boar in pure goodness for the purpose of maintaining the world. Fortunately for us, this demon who was a torment to the world has been slain by you, and we too, O Lord, are now at ease in devotion to your lotus feet. Om magyana timlandasya gananjana slakya shaksumaritam yena tasmai shigarve namaha. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasadale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Namne Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pucharine Nivisesa Sanyavadi Pasucha Deshataya. Hare Krishna. Actually, the Puranas, even including Bhagavatam, which is the thesis of Bhakti, there's so much variety in it that practically echoing also what we experience in real life, in one sense. There's humor, there's chivalry, there's love, there's separation, there's pain, especially in the Ramayana. They're full of all these different, leelas going on. Remember when I was young, we grew up with this Hong Kong Shaolin movies. I was always very fascinated by these movies, especially in the beginning when they're showing all these names of actors and everything. There was someone doing all these forms, and that was always very interesting for me. So the first time I read Bhagavad Gita, I thought, wow, this is interesting. This is a war story, a novel on war. So I picked it up and started reading it. And after 9 pages of it, I thought, when is the war going to start? You just keep talking and talking. There's no fighting involved. So you see, the chivalry is all there. Krishna wants to enjoy. Sometimes you think, we are such great enjoyers. But whatever little quality you have, it exists, it comes from Krishna. Krishna also enjoyed these leelas of fighting, bantering, joking, and sometimes pulling one another's legs when you go out with the cowboys in the forest of Vrindavan. They play jokes on one another. Sometimes Balaram put a flower in his mouth, pretending to be feeding him. So all this is going on. And so, when Krishna wants to fight, there's no one who can fight with him. So his devotees has to take birth in the excuse of an offense to Brahmana and all that. So they appear and take on the form of a demon to facilitate Krishna's leela and fight with him. And we hear in previous description the fighting going on, like Kilatita Prabhu was talking about. There's kicking, there's punching, there's this block, that block, and all these things are going on. And interesting. And the demigods hiding behind the clouds are watching. Oh yes, Krishna is winning now. And then suddenly Hiranyaksha get an upper hand, and then they get into anxiety. Oh no, at last. So all this was going on, and by this anxiety is also draw upon the devotion of the demigods. They're getting worried. Now just like also later on when you hear about Nrisimhadeva fighting with Hiranyakashipu. Sometimes Nrisimhadeva was winning, sometimes Hiranyakashipu because she was winning and the demons were getting freaking out with all this going on. This is too much. Too much drama going on here, too much anxiety. Just finish up this demon quickly. So actually it's very, very interesting. Bhagavatam. And here the demigods, after Krishna has dispatched Hiranyaksha, the demigods finally appear and address him, offering obeisances. And there are a few points mentioned here, but Prabhupada highlights specifically two points. One is how Krishna, he appeared as a boar, but in Visuddha Sattva form, in pure goodness, Amala, completely pure. When I was reading this verse yesterday, it just kind of dawned on me that Krishna, there are a few things we can actually take from this Krishna appearing as a boar. Even though Krishna appeared as a boar, it does not diminish his position. Because when we think of a boar or a pig, usually when we use the example of a pig or boar, we don't use it in very glorifying terms. When we give the example, we talk about how the pigs that live in the pig pen, they love to eat all this rubbish. The more rubbish it is, the better they enjoy it. And they have no discrimination of who they're having sex with, mother, sister, anyone. They just... So it's not in very glowing terms when you talk about boar. But how come when Krishna appeared as a boar, even the demigods and the sages are singing his glories? Hiranyaksha could not appreciate it. He said, oh, an amphibious boar appearing trying to challenge me. Who is this? But just see how compassionate and how practical also Krishna can be. He can assume any form to fulfill a certain purpose. Because the earth planet, Hiranyaksha has thrown the earth planet out of orbit to the bottom of the universe. So therefore Krishna appears as a boar. He can be on the land, he can be in the water, and pick it up with his tusks. And how he appeared is also very interesting. How Varahadev appeared is not an ordinary birth. Lord Brahma was sitting in meditation, and suddenly one speck come out from his nose. Now you have to think about it. Lord Brahma is the creator of the universe. He don't just create stuff that we usually create, that we have to clean up afterwards. So when this speck came out of his nose, he was thinking, what is this? You know, this is not my normal creation coming out of my nose. And then it was a growing spark, and this one was just growing bigger and bigger and bigger. And see how interesting how Krishna appeared just through the nose of Lord Brahma. So Krishna, although he takes birth, his birth is not ordinary. Or he appeared, his appearance is transcendental. That's why in the Bhagavad Gita, if someone who understands the transcendental nature of Krishna's appearance past times, upon leaving this world, he don't have to take birth. Don't have to take birth again. And when they first printed the Krishna book, Prabhupada instructed devotees to distribute Krishna book. He said, you just distribute this Krishna book. People who read Krishna book, they will become devotees. So when we were in Denmark and Sweden, when the first Krishna book came out in Swedish, we were really, really excited. We went out with full vigor, enthusiasm to go and distribute this Krishna book. Because we think, if people just read, Prabhupada said, they will become devotees. So based on that faith of our Prabhupada, we were just going out distributing a lot of Krishna book. So Krishna, he can appear in any form for the purpose of his Leela, or he can for the purpose of pleasing his devotees, or for the purpose of establishing religious principles. So people may ask, why does God have to come? Yes, that's the reason he's come. Sometimes he comes for his internal reasons, sometimes maybe external reasons. But when he comes, whatever form he appeared in, he's not affected by the most of material nature. He maintains his pure spiritual personality. Amala Bhakta, Visuddha Sattva. the pure goodness stage. Not even goodness. Because as long as we're in this material world, even the mode of goodness can be tinged by passion or ignorance. It's never pure. So Krishna is just completely aloof from the most of material nature. So as I was reading and kind of click on me how Krishna is so compassionate that you take a form of a boar just to save the earth planet, just to please his devotees and getting rid of this demon who is causing so much trouble. And I thought on it further, I thought, actually devotees, they also in the same mood of Krishna. They can take on a form, they can take on a position for whatever is required, but at the same time maintain the spiritual consciousness. That's why it's two sides to it. Sometimes in the early days when we are not so developed, we are a lot of rough ages, but we read Vaishnavas above the Brahmanas. And then we go to India and start behaving like Vaishnavas above Brahmanas, but don't even, and still acting like Malechas and Yavanas habits. No? We took it too literally. But what it means is that to be of the earth, that you have to be actually in that consciousness. When you're in that consciousness of a Vaishnava, then whatever position we take, whatever position we take, whether in the Vanashram system, whether it's a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra, or Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas, he's just acting through those roles. And we see that as devotees. We don't very much identify one another as a Brahmana or as a Kshatriya, whatever. So throughout the day, we may be acting as a Brahmana. The next moment, we're acting as a Kshatriya. And next moment, we'll be doing Vaishya, Sudra, we may be acting in all four, Vana, in one day. Just like the Melbourne weather. It's constantly changing. In the morning here, you're giving class, you're acting like Brahma giving class. Then next moment, you may be sweeping the floor or doing some sudra work. And then you're in the office doing some administration. Or you're going out doing some business or some farming or whatnot, trading. We're not hang up about that. Our main focus is to remain Krishna conscious in whatever position we are in and whatever activities we're performing, whatever service we're performing. And looking out here, there are some temple devotees, there are some of us working outside. So how do we maintain the consciousness when we're outside in our regular job? When we look at the job, there's no, what is the relevance to Krishna? Working in an office in an IT, creating system, creating programming, database, so on and so forth, or some trading, or whatever we're doing. So how do we maintain that Krishna consciousness when we're out there? Actually, this is my most favorite topic. Having gone through that stage of moving out from the temple and working outside and trying to create a balance and how to still not hide who I am, but at the same time not trying to impose it on anyone and trying to maintain that bit of separation. A bit of struggle, trying to find the balance. But if you're able to do that, your colleague will just respect you for who you are. You don't have to participate in what we're doing, they're doing. They just accept you as a very good person, as a very a spiritual person. It's just like my boss just recently, you know, there's a big thing in Australia, Christmas party. And for devotees, they fear that day. Where the whole office, they go out and they just drink from morning to night. That's what they do. They just drink and drink and drink, isn't it? And then they eat. So my boss flew me up to Sydney for Christmas party. And play some long golf. And then they sit down and play games, and whoever loses the game, they will drink up. And when it came to me, I will have my bottle of water. I'll drink my water. And my colleague said, "Hey, CJ, that's not fair." And my boss said, "Hey, leave him alone. He's a good man. He don't drink." Because I established right from the beginning, when I went up there for the first week training, I told one of my boss that I used to live in Sweden, Denmark for 21 years. And after a few days, he was curious. He asked me, what were you doing in Europe for 21 years? I said, you really want to know? He said, yeah, I want to know. I said, I was a monk. I said, Buddhist monk? I said, no. Hindu monk, Hare Krishna monk. And I pulled out my phone and showed him a picture. A photo of my monk when I was a brahmachari. I went, wow, that was so long ago. Oh, wow. So right from the beginning, I said, this is who I am. And I'm also a vegetarian. So sometimes devotees say, I have problem this, I have problem that. I never had problem. They try and I just, it's alright. And they just respect that. They don't just accept you who you are, but they respect you for who you are. So now sometimes you talk and they'll tell me, say, see, there is all three bosses, all three directors, they say, we are so happy to have you on board. We are so happy to have you as part of our team. So just sometimes we forget as devotees, by practicing Krishna consciousness, we have so many good qualities just gradually developing within us. No, we forget that. And if we just behave like who we are, that's powerful preaching. Sometimes when I speak to devotees, that they think preaching means you have to give the whole Srimad Bhagavatam in 7 minutes. You want to try to do better than Sukadeva Goswami. Sukadeva Goswami took 7 days and 7 nights. And we tried to cram the whole Bhagavatam in one sitting. And the guy's just like... I like to tell this story. When I was a new devotee in the temple, the same day I shave up, I saw this two Malaysian guys came to the temple for Sunday feast and thought, wow, Malaysian, there's a connection here. And I was preaching, and I was like, whatever little knowledge I have, I was just pouring into them. And it was like going towards a corner. And the bhakta leader was trying to get in and try to suit things out, and I just didn't give him a chance. I was just so fired up. And I never see them again. And then the next time on a Sunday feast, there was this very young couple from Finland. They live in Sweden. You see, the temple I joined in Sweden was outside. So you have to take a train and then from changing a bus. And there are not many buses that go. So they came. And I was in the Sunday, if you were having prasadam, and we were preaching to them, and I started talking about four regulative principles. Me, a young couple, you know. And I started talking about four regulative principles. And then they were looking, I think our buses are leaving. and they left. And I never see them again. So I thought about it and I thought, maybe I'm doing something wrong here. No, everyone I preach to, I don't see them again. Instead of bringing them to Krishna consciousness, I'm driving them away. So I stopped preaching for 2 years, or maybe even 3 years. I will not talk to any guest. I'll just sit there, and I'll just sit next to a senior devotee, and he preached. I'll just sit there and listen. How did they make the opening from talking about prasadam to starting talking, preaching? How did they make a connection? How did they develop a rapport with the person? And how did they enter into a conversation and start talking about Krishna so smooth? You know? I'll just sit there and listen, and then gradually learn a little bit, And over the years, I came to realize, when you talk about preaching, it's not always just about talking philosophy. Sometimes we think, if the word name Krishna is not in every sentence, then it's not preaching. We are Maya. Sometimes you may be saying something innocuous, but that has such an influence on people. You just have to understand, in sales, we call it the moment of truth. Anyone in sales here? Have you learned that in sales training? The moment of truth?
But I studied the moment of truth.
You learned that in uni?
Yeah, uni,
the moment of truth means that particular point where you met your client or met the person. That is the moment of truth. So for a devotee, when we're talking with someone, whether he's a devotee or maybe he's a guest or whoever, or colleague, whatever, any connection, that's a moment of truth. Now what are you going to bring to that moment during that connection? And what is that person going to take away from that connection? That's what we have to think about. So if you're going to preach heavily to that person, and that person walk away completely, felt like, wow, this guy is just overwhelming, too much. I don't want to have anything with this guy, to do with this guy. Then we defeat the purpose. But if we just be nice to that person, and the person walk away and say, wow, he's a really nice guy, I want to get to know him or her. I want to find out, where is this goodness coming from? And in the early days, when Prabhupada go for morning walk, he would just greet everyone, good morning, good morning. And do this thing. Why Prabhupada said good morning? Why is he not saying Hare Krishna to them? And Prabhupada says good morning. And they ask, finally, the curiosity got the better of them. Ah. See, if I say Hare Krishna, people think, what is that? Strange. But because I'm saying good morning, they're also saying good morning. So they're saying good morning to the devotee. You see how smart a devotee is? By then greeting a devotee's good morning, they're getting sukriti. They're getting benefit. So that's the whole idea. Our existence is not just practicing Krishna consciousness about ourselves, but acting in such a way to give people the sukriti, to get them somehow closer to Krishna, a little small step. Sometimes very, very, very difficult for modern society, especially Western society, to understand that. Because it's, especially the present generation, it's a now generation. You want to have a song, I want it now, baby. I want it now. That's why all this fast food that is so popular. People don't even have time for lunch. They have to go and grab something and stuff it into their face and get back to work. Everything is really fast. They can never sit down to enjoy a meal. And so we think we have to do everything bam, 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 bam. There's no subtlety. No? We have to go in like a needle and come out like a plow. Not go in like a plow and come out with nothing. So sometimes we just sing something maybe it's very mundane. But the whole thing is, what is the consciousness behind it? You're not just being frivolous, you have a purpose. And you've just been presenting yourself, I'm a gentleman, like Prabhupada said, a devotee is gentlemen and ladies. They behave properly, they dress properly, and they go out when they behave, they act with people, they act properly. And that's how we influence further out. But when we are within, if someone is receptive, then we can talk when they have Krishna Katha. Ultimately, that's a real pleasure of a devotee, have Krishna Katha and just talk about Krishna. But when outside, time, place, circumstances, kala, patra, desha, according to circumstances, who the audience is, who is, it's just like a teacher. Any teacher here? Okay. What, are you still teaching?
I'm homeschooling myself.
You're homeschooling. What, how old?
7.
Oh, you're home the only one. How were you teaching before? And primary school or secondary?
Secondary.
You had university degree in teaching. So you know these advanced formulas. But when you're teaching a secondary kid, you don't bombard them with all those advanced formulas. Right? You teach them according to that level they are in. So you require a bit of discipline. So when we're preaching, it's like that. Very quickly, you have to identify the audience, whether it's a group or individual. When it's group, it's a lot harder because they're all different levels, to speak in general. But when you're preaching one-to-one, you have to identify who is that person, what is that level, what is his level of interest. Yeah, and you have to find that out very quickly. And then you present according to that level and bring them up from that level up. That's why actually devotees who are preachers and who have experienced, who have done Sankirtan, who have been preachers, they are very good salespeople. We develop all the skills of a salesperson in Krishna consciousness. You know how to build rapport, you know how to establish a base, you know how to present, and you understand psychology because you study Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam. That's the best psychology course you can get. How Krishna psychoanalyzed Arjuna and bring in the point of doubt. He has so much doubt that he wants to leave the battlefield and not fight. And in the end of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna said, now all my doubts have been dispelled. I'm ready to do whatever you say. So Krishna brought him from doubts to complete surrender through Bhagavad Gita, gradually. So there are so many things that we can learn and pick up from Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Chaitanya Charitamrita, we learn about the interaction between devotee. So in this way, like Krishna, you can appear in any form for particular purposes. Then some devotees can act in any situation and still maintain. That's why our sadhana has to be good. Our sadhana establishes with the base, the strong foundation. So when you have a strong foundation, when you reach out, you can pull someone out. But if your foundation is not strong, you try to pull someone out, you end up the other person pulling you down. And that I've seen also devotees who don't chant properly, they don't have any sadhana, whatever, they go out and preach, and then they go out even far out to try to preach to Mayavadis and all this, they end up talking like them. I've seen that. They start preaching Mayavad philosophy. They lose that perspective that sometimes the differences is not very clear. And they just lose that, become cloudy. Again, you use the example of back to Shaolin Kung Fu. When a new student starts, they make them stand on that horse stance. You know what's a horse stance? You bend the leg, and you're sitting down, but there's no chair. And you become very, very strong here. You just stand there like that for hours and hours and hours, for days and months and years, you just stand. And because once they've established a strong foundation, when they do their fighting, the punching and kicking, it has a lot of force. So that's our foundation, our sadhana. The chanting, the program, the reading, all this, that gives us a very strong core. That gives us a very strong understanding, a deep understanding and attachment to Krishna. So when we take on different activities, we can maintain the Krishna consciousness. So in this way, by doing that, we become more and more useful as an instrument to Krishna. We want to be an instrument of Krishna, but we want to be a good instrument. We don't want to be an instrument when Krishna plays on the flute, that instrument is out of tune. And Krishna play one note and then it came out a different note. Now, it's like good musician always tune their even the harmonium, they tune it first before they play, and when they play, it comes out exactly the way they want it. So we want to be that kind of instrument for Krishna, that when they play one note, it comes out that music. And that's our constant meditation. How to be a good instrument in the hand of the spiritual master, a good instrument in the hand of Krishna, and play according to them. The melody that they're playing. Then that melody is very sweet, very attractive. And that's our sacrifice. We talk about sacrifices here. Krishna is the enjoyer of all sacrifices. Sometimes we hear about sacrifices, it's so scary. Oh, sacrifice, you have to sacrifice for Krishna. But we are doing that anyway. How much the mother sacrifice for the child? All the mother souls have young kids, they still remember. When the baby is born, new baby, they don't have a sleeping rhythm. They wake up any time they want in the night. And the mother don't get to sleep. And sometimes the father also has to take, shift. Taking care of baby. So that's sacrifice. If you have not that moon of sacrifice, you dump the baby and then let it cry and lock him up in another room. But because there's love, there's sacrifice. You make sacrifice. Parents are making sacrifices all the time for the kids. Why? Because they love the kids. They're attached to the kids, they love the kids. And sometimes you're eating something that you like, and that's the last piece. If a kid wants it, you just give it to the kid, isn't it? Right? You have experienced that? You do that?
Yeah.
So this is going on. It's part of nature. But it's who we are making those sacrifices for. And here in this verse very clearly says, Akila Yagya Tantra, the enjoyer of all sacrifices. Krishna is the enjoyer of all sacrifices. And in the early part of Bhagavatam, it says, Vasudeva Svad Yagya. All Yagya is meant for the satisfaction of Vasudeva. And when we perform Yagya for the satisfaction of Krishna, we free ourselves from kamabandha. Yagyata kamanoyatra, lokayam kamabandhana, tat atam kamakantaya mukta sangha samachara. We all have to perform sacrifice one way or the other. Either we sacrifice our time, our energy, our attachment, possession, so on and so forth. We have to sacrifice. But who are we making all the sacrifices for? So when we make sacrifices for the satisfaction of Krishna, then we free ourselves from all bondage. The sacrifices that people make is really severe. Especially Asian culture are very familiar with making sacrifices. Western culture also in older days, but Western culture nowadays is more about individualism, me first. And the Asians are catching up. But previously it was not like that. This is progress from we to me. But Asian cultures still have this kind of remnants of it, like close knit family, but even that is beginning to fall apart gradually because they're so eager to follow the West. But and that's why it breaks down of unit, family unit into individual. And that's why it's so much more, because no support system there. Everyone just me, everything for myself, me first. But being me first is not too bad if we understand what me means and what is my real interest, where my real interest lies. If we understand that truly, then it's not too bad. You know? Because there's a statement that in order to save a village, one can sacrifice an individual. To save a province, you can sacrifice a village. Save a country, you can sacrifice a province. And save the world, you can sacrifice a country. But you can sacrifice the world to save oneself. So yes, it's true. Me as a person is most important, provided we understand what is that importance. Is that we are here with a purpose. As human beings, we are given this human body. It has a purpose to fulfill and realize our Krishna consciousness, go back home back to Godhead. So in terms of that, one has to protect it with all rigor. Sometimes one makes sacrifices just to protect that. So that's also one thing come to understand, that as you read and study and listen to all these lectures and practice, as you progress, whatever you understand is kind of your understanding of it broadens. And when your understanding of a particular topic broadens, it brings in different other perspective into the picture. It brings other elements into the picture. And you start to see, it's just like a common example, when you look at a mountain, from far you just see blur. But as you approach closer and closer, you start seeing form. You start seeing a lot of individualism in that. You see the trees, the plants, the shrubs, the flowers, the leaves, animals, the flies, the butterfly, the bees, and so on. You see a lot of things going on there. And it paints a completely different picture in your mind, isn't it? So Krishna consciousness is like that. In the beginning, the canvas is a bit blur. And then as we progress, as our consciousness become purified, as we advance and mature in Krishna consciousness, that canvas become such thin form, like clearing. And it's a very powerful process. Some years ago, I was back in Malaysia for a short trip. My brother-in-law, he's a naturopath. He loves his machines and instruments. So he has this program that is linked to his downloaded on his computer. I don't know how much he paid for it, which can measure your stress level. Oh yeah, that you just put something on your finger, and within a minute or two, you measure your stress level. So how it works is that on the screen will be a drawing, and that drawing is just pencil drawing. If you're stressed, there'll be no color. If you're less stressed, slight color. But if you are calm and relaxed, then all the different colors come out on the picture. So he was measuring me, and it didn't turn out so good on the screen. So I said, try again. He put it on and started chanting, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. I started chanting, and as the chanting progresses, more and more colors are coming out in the screen. because the chanting brings you into a deeper consciousness, where you rise above the most material nature, all the stress level, all this dissolve. And as I get more and more absorbed in chanting, he couldn't believe his eye. He was like, "This is amazing! This is amazing! Wow!" He was really impressed. So we make sacrifices. So when you combine these two, acting in a way, but in our actions, we perform our actions as a sacrifice for Krishna, for his pleasure. In this way, we also get protected. When we act in the interest of Krishna, we get protected. Just like when we were on our book distribution or when our Sankirtan, we had no fear. We don't know fear, you see? We don't know what fear was. Practically, we did crazy things.
Yes.
We don't recommend you to do those things nowadays. Now you have more mature guidance. Previously, everything go in the name of Krishna. So we had no fear. I even remember me and my wife asked to go to Russia. That was before the Iron Curtain came down, towards the end of it, where devotees were still in jail. They were still in labor camp and psychology hospital and all these things, more than 20 of them. And I was asked to go with my wife, because I passed through Moscow. I was taking Aeroflot from Denmark to Marco. So we flew Aeroflot. It's you're taking high risk flying Aeroflot. And I was stopping over because there was a change of flight there, so there were some hours. I mentioned it to one devotee and who was the GBC there. He lived in Sweden. He told me, he said, "Why do you meet the devotees?" I said, "Can I?" Because I heard a lot of preaching there. I said, "Oh yeah." Okay, he said, "I'll give you a number. When you arrive at the airport, you call the number." So when we arrived there, me and my wife, it was in January or February, freezing cold. I was in slippers, and I didn't have warm clothing because I was on my way to India. So at the airport, I called up the number, and he was really, really like, it was like out of a spy novel. He said, "Okay, you meet me at the Kremlin Square, next to the St. Basil Cathedral. You take a bus in, and you just stand there and you wait, and I'll be in a trench coat, and I have a newspaper under my left arm." So, me and my wife were standing there waiting, looking around, who is a KGB and who is a devotee, standing there waiting, and then he walked by us and said, "Follow me." Okay. And he has this hat on. okay, follow him. And then we got on the bus. They say, get down now. And we got down on the bus, took another bus, got down the bus and take another bus. I don't know how many times we changed, 3 times, 4 times, whatever. And finally, we arrived at the flat. I just called not even an hour ago. By the time I arrived at the flat, there were more than 20 devotees there. In the flat. So I went there, did a short kirtan, give a class, answer some questions, boom, off again, back to the airport. So I came back, I told Jisha, I said, wow, that was really nice, you know, and really, the devotees are so enthusiastic, they're so eager to hear about Krishna. And they went quiet, and then 2 months later, about 4 months later, I got a call from the Code UBC, who was my guru. He said, I heard that you were in Moscow and you like it. I said, yeah. I said, why don't you go there for a week? Act as a BBT liaison. He said, okay. And bring your wife so it looks good. So I was asked to go. Then I told the first UBC, I said, my name was Keith Rush. I live in Alachuana. I said, how am I going to Russia? I just shaved my head. And his reply completely shocked me. Why do you do such a stupid thing? I said, what do you mean? We are supposed to shave our head. And you tell me I'm doing a stupid thing for shaving. Since that time, I have not shaved. I don't know why, somehow. Always prepared to go into Russia or somewhere. So I had to wait another month or 1.5 months to grow out my hair a bit. Learn the program. Have a laptop. Anyone remember the Toshiba 1000? It was like one of the first laptop. I have no idea how it works. But I had to spend almost a week because I'm so low tech. 1 week to memorize how to, with a few keys, turn the keyboard into a Russian serial keyboard from English to Russian. So I had to really memorize it. And I was supposed to bring the laptop and leave it there. When everything you bring in is written on your passport. I said, I'm going to leave the computer there. So I went there at the custom, went to immigration and custom. They checked everything, my hand baggage and everything they were checking. But I gave the laptop to my wife. She was carrying it. So she was next in line. And just as she was coming up, another officer came and they started talking and started smoking. So I told my wife, oh, we're done, let's go. And we walked right past. So we were able to bring the laptop in without registering it. But we had no fear. We were not worried. We just, oh, Nishingadev, Hare Krishna, please protect us. That's about it. So and during the week, every day was in a different safe house, right? Empty flat, nobody lived there. Whole day questions about BBT, blah blah blah. Then the final few days, I said, look, I'm not going to answer day and night. I want to do programs in the night. Last 3 nights, they arranged programs. And you cannot imagine, the rooms are so small. 2 rooms, one is living room and then one is like entry hallway. So I was just sitting there chanting Radha Madhava and then chanting Hare Krishna. People are coming in, it's alright, I just move my seat, move a little bit back, chant, and then people are coming, move back, started giving class, people are coming, and then in the end I was sitting at the corner like that to give the class. There was no room. It was devoted everywhere. It was every inch of the floor was filled up. I was just sitting there giving class like that. And then on the last night, the devotee is driving me back to the hotel. Oh, do you know there was a KGB informer there? I freaked out. I said, what? Now what are you telling me? There was an informer there. So the next day at the airport, they stopped me. Everything, they took out everything. The devotees gave me all the manuscripts and the video, the tape painting, everything to bring back. And I was all with all these evidences right in front, they took everything out. And then the guy opened the painting of Krishna and said, "Ah, Krishna." "What? Where does this come from? How do you know about Krishna?" And two KGB agents in suit took the videotape and went off. But we were not scared. I think we don't understand what fear means in those days. We were married, but we didn't have kids. So, you know, "Oh, Krishna, what's your lila now?" And the check and the effort guy said, "Come on, they got to go, they're boarding now." And they gave me back everything. They didn't confiscate anything. So we went to the gate, lining up to board the plane, and said, "Thank Krishna, thank God, thank you." And out of my corner of my eyes, I saw these two KGB guys came in. I said, "Oh no, Krishna, not now. Let me get on the plane." And they came up to me and gave me back the video and said, "Have a safe flight."
Hare Krishna.
I said, "What's going on here?" When I went back to Krishna, he couldn't believe it. He said, "What is going on in Russia? Things are changing." So, I mean, we did things like that. We did crazy, but we're not thinking. We're young. We were idealistic. And we want to change the world. Those were the generation of devotees who joined around that time. We want to change the world. And when the leaders are in the class, they say, "Sweden is the first country beyond Krishna consciousness." Everyone go, "Ah! Australia is going to be first." And I went, "Ah!" Every leader will say about their country being the first to become Krishna conscious. Went, "Yeah, you're going to change the world." And every time we read in the Bhagavatam, when Prabhupada said, in the Bhagavatam, he said, "This Srimad Bhagavatam changed the, caused a revolution in the heart of mankind." We said, "Ah, yeah, we got this Srimad Bhagavatam. Going to cause a revolution." So this was going on, but we did it with I think one senior devotee was saying, like children, we're like children. We don't know very much. We just only what we know what the father say, the guru, the father. He said, "Hey, do this, let me just do it." We're just going to. And that's how Krishna was conscious of spirit in the early days. Just pure enthusiasm of the devotee. Most of us have no idea what we're doing. We just went on, just did it. So we make blunders. We have a lot of rough edges. Then we just went on and did. Nowadays, a bit more refined. And as the generation go on, you'll be more and more refined. Yeah. But we sacrifice. We make a sacrifice. Give everything. Give everything to Krishna. We didn't understand anything about possession. I remember when I got married, we did it was on a Sunday feast. I only had two friends from that I know from Malaysia, in Sweden. So they were coming. I said, "Don't buy a present. You want to come, just bring in Chinese with this red envelope with money in it. Just bring that." I collect that. Sunday feast went around, because in those days Sunday feast would go around collecting donation from the guests. I went around collecting donation after the wedding, collecting everything, and in the evening when the Sri Krishna came back, I collected everything, I just gave it. He said, "What is this?" I said, "Yeah, that's a collection for today, for my wedding." He said, "It's your wedding, I'm supposed to give you something. I said, "No, you're my Sri Krishna, I'm supposed to give you everything." Didn't even keep a single cent from just gave. So that was good. Just everything just gave. No consideration. Because we just all these things just pop up in our eye. "Wow, Krishna is enjoying all sacrifices. Krishna is okay, we do it." And it's true. So if we just put Krishna as a center, he's enjoying all sacrifices. Whatever activity we perform, put him in the center. Link it up. And Prabhupada said the ways you can surrender, you can surrender by giving your life to Krishna. Give your life as a sacrifice to Krishna. You can't do that. You have money, you offer your wealth to Krishna. You don't have wealth, you have skills. You have some skill, you offer your skill to Krishna. Just like in India, especially in South India, all these beautiful temples, built over many, many years. All these artisans, craftsmen, They use their skill as an offering, as a sacrifice to Krishna, and they build all these beautiful temples. And if you don't have anything, you can't give your life to Krishna, you don't have money, because you are deadbeat, but you don't have any skill, you have a tongue. You can chant. You can glorify Krishna. You can talk about Krishna. So there's always something that we can offer as a sacrifice of Krishna. It's never any moment we cannot do anything. There's always something we can do. So every little thing we do, we add it up. We add up, add up, add up. In the beginning of Krishna consciousness, like swimming against the stream, because it's so much against our adopted nature, the Maya nature. But as you progress, as you add more positive Krishna consciousness, the scales thin. Now Krishna consciousness become more than the bad habit. Then things go a little smoother. But still there will be some current here and there. So, a bit of a diversion from the class, sorry. Tendency to do that. Any comments? Any questions? Any wisecrack? Wisecrack or comments or question? Okay.
Chandra Madhiji went with you that first trip when you went on and off the buses. She was also going?
Yeah, she.
Russia?
Yeah, she was with me. She was the one carrying the laptop. She had no idea what she was doing. She was just tagging along. We were in the hotel room, and just see how this dictator country where they all this very how they create that mentality and that fear. Sometimes all this fear we have is not real; it's an imagination. But we were in the hotel room. We were completely not fear, but how's the word? We were thinking, is there a camera in the room? Paranoid. We were completely paranoid. Is there a camera in the room? Is there some microphone that can hear what we're talking? So when we're talking, we're whispering. Or we make some sound when we're whispering, because they have seen movies before now. If we make some sound, then they cannot hear what you're saying. If we're chanting, we'll be very softly, practically just whispering to ourselves. No japa be, that's for sure. and with all these things, it was so paranoid. And when the devotees, but the devotees were so relaxed. They took us out on Abad, the main street, on walking street. They were walking and taking undergrounds and walking. My eyes were like, is the KGB watching us? They were just cool. They were just walking, relaxed. And I was worried. And they just came out. They have just came out from a psychological hospital. Four of them. Just been released. And there they go again. They were so amazing. They put them in one ward. They were preaching so much. So the authority said this is not good. So they separate them. We got to separate them. So they separate them two wards. They created two cells. Preaching cells. So instead of preaching one ward, now they're preaching two. And they gave me stuff, the bread that they have, they harden it and make it into japa bread. I don't know where I have it now. No, I think Krishna took it from me as soon as I showed him took it. I could not even keep it as so many. They make it into japa bread from half bread. And they have this parampara altar, very, very small, that is folded in aluminium foil, folded into a tiny little piece. And then you can unfold it and you have the parampara with the panchatattva in it. Very creative. They didn't stop them preaching. Any other questions about today's verse or about the crazy past? Yes, Mahi.
From Russia?
Well, the other thing is that from Chandravali's side, because the last 3 days we were going to do program, the Mataji was going to take her out shopping. She came back and said, everywhere I go, nyet, nyet. No, no, nothing to buy. Mm. Nothing in the shop. They have to buy one or two pieces here, one or two pieces. They have to go to three, four shops and buy a little here and there. He said, I don't even know what I have. That is definitely not any recipe I know. I just put something together. And the devotees are like, wow! And then, here comes the real thing. One old Mataji, her name was Yagya. She came up with a little can of a hing, asafoetida. Said, this is very bad. We only use it on special occasion. At this special occasion, you can use it. It was like gold for them, because they have a bottle of hing. And so Chandari feeling bad, he was just using a very little bit of it because it's so precious. There was nothing, couldn't buy anything. And somehow she made a few preparations and the devotees thought, wow, they never tasted anything like that before because they have nothing. And the Armenians are very good with police. We got stopped by the police and they said, don't worry, brother, just sit here, we'll take care of it. They ran back to the police, they started laughing, stick some rubbers in the hand, and then we drove off. And when you go to such places, actually, it make life so interesting, so exciting. Krishna consciousness becomes so exciting because there's this danger. You know? And the danger, that danger was not even so much because it was towards the end. Parasrakha, Krasnas, Gorbachev already introduced it, so it's towards the end of it. But other devotees were telling stories where they're preaching Eastern Europe, crazy things they were doing. They can just end up in jail and the keys are thrown away and forgotten. Anyone been to Europe or Germany? Oh, you're from there. But Berlin is sitting. You have East Berlin and West Berlin. It's sitting right inside East Germany. So in order to go from the West into West Berlin, there's a highway that cut across East Germany. So you get checked and you're not allowed to stop. You can stop and tank up and whatever, but you cannot drive off the highway. And it goes straight to Berlin. Devotees will fill up a van with books that drive to one of those stops. Park it there, and another one will come by, and quickly they change the number plate, and the devotee will drive the empty van to Berlin, and the other devotee will drive to East Germany. That's how they bring books. And sometimes they drive through the night into East Germany, knock on someone's door who don't even know he's coming. I saw the books in your basement. another time this devotee was giving class and they heard a car and he has this sixth sense. Said that's a police. Said no, we're too deep in the woods. Said that's a police. They checked, look out the window, sure enough the police was approaching. And the three foreign devotees, Devananda Maharaj was one of them, they had to climb out the window. But because they had no shoes, one of them stepped on the glass. Oh, it was cut right through the feet and still have to run into the forest and hide in the forest. And until everything is clear, and then they came back. In those days, when they preached, they lived in Eastern Europe with snow. Like one hurricane, he wrote to Prabhupada, say it's so hot here, there's nothing to eat. And Prabhupada wrote back, he said, the hot or no hot, you still have to stay and preach. If there's nothing to eat, eat meat if you have to, but you've got to preach. But I just drive me to the point that you cannot give up preaching. And in the middle of winter, I mean, just sometimes people complain about winter here. There's nothing. And you 14, 15 degrees in the daytime, winter, for winter. In winter there, Winter is like minus 15, minus 20, and there's no water in the house. You want to so our old houses, you have to go to the outhouse, the toilet, and a little pipe. So you have a bucket there, and the water is dripping in the night to fill it up. And in the morning, it's ice on top. And you go out with your gamcha. They went out with the gamcha, with the lota, break the ice, and you have to take bath, right? Not just pasta su kaunte, yeah, sisters, that's the good look at that. Tolerance. So, they take a lota water. What did he say? Austerity is the well of the Brahmana! Austerity is the well of the Brahmana! And that's how to take the bath. Ice water! Not cold water, it's ice water! I don't know how they feel. I have experienced, but not even so severe. In Sweden, at one time we were traveling in the caravan, sleeping in the caravan with five people, brahmacharis with wet clothing, gamcha, everything lying. And it's very moist inside, the humid. Then we collect water from a gas station, put it inside. So by the next day, it's not warm anymore. And then we have to take it outside with the wind blowing and come shine, take a bath. Then I have to come back in, put on a lot of jacket, try to defrost. And then you try to chant. That's called Dracula Japa. Oh, good on. So hard to chant around because you're trying to keep warm. And because it's so humid and carrying all covered up, you fall asleep. You're trying to stay awake, the chant is so hard. But it's awful, Prabhupada. But now it's more balanced. With this, you will take care of your body and don't do all those crazy things. That's why many of the old devotees have so much health issues. Never take care of your body. For many years, also, I have all these health issues. When we went Sangitan, our lunch bag was fried peanuts, not in ghee, in lard. You know what is lard? What is it made from actually? Peanut, coconut, some leftover lard, is it? No, this is supposedly vegetarian lard. And you fry in that. Peanuts and raisins. And you have Eurasian, you cannot just eat as much as you want. There's one person in charge of the prasadam. It's supposed to last for 2 weeks, so you ration it. So much handful of peanuts, so much handful of raisins. Then you'll be lucky you get a piece of apple. And then we'll make cheese. Our party was the opulent one, so we had cheese. Curd. And more often we put a bit of chili and salt in it, so it had a little bit of flavor. So if you take a chunk of cheese in the morning with your khichdi, then you don't get it for your lunch break. And that was our lunch. And in the evening, just a glass of milk. And you're out there for 8 hours or whatnot, carrying this heavy book bag. So it's a natural result, your health just goes downwards. And especially with this body born in Malaysia, warm weather, and then you're going out there in minus 10, minus 15 degrees. And so everything, and I just was collapsing left and right. Couldn't, after 3.5 years, I just couldn't, body just couldn't take it. But no regret. Because you get a taste of what giving up everything means, what sacrifices mean. So, I recommend it. It's crazy. It was crazy, but isn't it, young Sumatra Prabhu? It's worth it? All those crazy times?
It's worth it back.
Yeah. You get a taste of what really full surrender means, and now it's just a matter of maintaining it, and the amount of mercy you get. Although we don't have much knowledge, we're not very refined, whatever, we just get so much blessings. Yes, Prabhu.
I remember sometimes when we were in that books to the street, stupid. It's sitting there that the bodies used to go through your lockers.
Touch your locker.
And if you had any books,
God. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. You'd be reading a canto, like a 3-1 canto, next day.
We take things very literally. Remember, one devotee was telling me, just, you just have to think about books all day. How can you think about books all day? So when I go to sleep, I have the book right next to me. The last thing I see will be the books when I fall asleep. The first thing I see when I wake up is books. And when I chant, it's just books. So you become very conscious of it. And Denmark was a very, very tough country to be, and especially to manage as a leader. Prior to me coming there, none of the devotees who was active temple president lasted more than a year. And they had to just go off. It's just crazy days. Very ignorant and anything goes. So I first started out as a Sankirtan leader, and it was a real wild bunch. The Danish Sankirtan devotees, hope they're not hearing this. How are we going to control them? So I started making spaghetti for them every evening. And somehow they loved my spaghetti. And I controlled them with spaghetti. Don't behave. Everyone in your sleeping bag by 8 o'clock. I don't want to hear a voice, no talking. I had to treat them like kids somehow. You talk, you make noise, you're not in bed. Tomorrow, no pasta. And all behave very well. And then quote us how many books to distribute for the week, and they do. I remember one young brahmachari joined about 18 years old. He joined, at that time must be about 18 and a half, 19 years old. We came back to the temple on Saturday, he would bring all the clothing for washing and the laundry. But he was short by 2 books or something. So people were watching, he was distributing books. He said, please, you've got to take this book, otherwise I won't get pasta today. Chianji won't let me have his spaghetti today. And just, it's created such a trauma, whatever, impression on mine. They're still talking about my pastor. more than 30 years later. Sometimes it came up, you know, you see a picture of me making a noodle, and say, Chianji, I still remember your spaghetti. Such a deep impression. Anything? No question. So thank you very much. But maybe not very philosophical, but at least it was entertaining. I see you laughing. So you had your entertainment for this morning. Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai.